Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, it's another big week of story, and let's start with our new cover, which is Days of Our Lives. So for all the Eric and Nicole fans who were upset by their breakup, well, the two decide they are in love and want to be together. So they share a kiss, which Eric's girlfriend Jada spies, and ultimately Jada faints, which can only mean one thing in soaps. She's pregnant. So needless to say, it puts a bit of a damper on the reunion, and Nicole's husband, Rafe, isn't too thrilled to hear about the turn of events, so expect a lot of drama coming up in Salem. In other marital news, Bold and Beautiful's Ridge, whose signature on his annulment papers from Brooke is barely dry, will propose to Taylor, who happily accepts.
I genuinely wonder if any soap opera character has proposed marriage more than Ridge Forrester has. My goodness. Well, GH also has a hotly anticipated moment in store for its fans this coming week. For the first time since Spencer went off to Pentonville, he receives a visit from Trina. So Sprina has not been in the same room together for months, outside of like the little fantasy that Trina had, which I'm going to say doesn't count. And there is a lot for them to unpack when they finally do come face to face. So I got to get the scoop on that from Tabian Ali, who plays Trina. And she cracked me up because she is totally in the same boat as the Sprina fans, who are going crazy waiting for these two to finally admit their feelings for one another to one another. And then on YNR, it's time for Devon to face the music for his indiscretion with Abby. Amanda gives him the heave-ho, which also marks the last time, for now, that we will be seeing her portrayer, Michelle Morgan, who, as we all know, has opted to go on recurring status. But to balance out that departure, the show made a huge announcement this week about the return of a fan fave that I am so excited about.
Well, the big hint here is Rock On. It's Michael Damian, who first began playing Danny Romolotti in 1981 and stayed till 1998. He was last seen in 2013, but will be back in Genoa City on December 22nd for a visit. Now, this news comes hot on the heels of Michael Grazia Day's return as Danny and Phyllis's son, Daniel. So I imagine father and son will cross paths again. So since leaving Genoa City, Michael has found great success as a director, writer, and producer. His next movie, Falling for Christmas, stars Lindsay Lohan, who got her start as Another World's Ally and Cord Overstreet of Glee fame. So you can find that on Netflix now. Michael's next movie also stars Lindsay, and that's called Irish Wish. Now, when we interviewed Michael on our podcast in 2020, he told us that he was thrilled that they never killed his character off and appreciates that there is still interest in Danny. Now, that was a great chat. Anyone listening who never heard it, go back. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. I mean, I could not be more excited about this move. I think it'll be great to see Phyllis, Danny, and Daniel all together again.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited for that. You know, my earliest memories as a YNR viewer has Danny like so central to them. And I know that's true for you as well, even though we started watching it at different times. Mm-hmm. I hope we get a Danny Cricket, aka Christine, interaction as well, as long as we're making wish lists. But you know, you can never go wrong with bringing back an iconic character like Danny Romolotti. And even if it's just for a short visit, I am not going to miss a moment of it. I think honestly that the older I get, the more I appreciate these visits from the actors who were part of why I fell in love with soaps to begin with. You know, I honestly can't believe it's been like 9 years since he was last on the show. That is far too long, in my opinion. So I'm thrilled that all the necessary, you know, stars aligned to put Danny and Daniel and Phyllis all in town at the same time together again.
Oh, me too. And if there isn't Danny Cricket, I will be so sad, because that is literally what sucked me into even watching Y&R in the first place. So now this certainly isn't the first time I'm saying this here, but I do love this trend of bringing back people for visits. You know, for longtime viewers like we are, it's such a warm reminder, as you mentioned, of what got us hooked in the first place. And again, just feels more realistic that people come in and out of town for visits, you know, like in real life, and especially with this one being tied to the holidays. Because he should come home for the holidays.
Absolutely.
Now, someone I know we would both love to see back on Soaps again is our guest today. It's Melissa Archer, who is best known to viewers as One Life to Live's Natalie and Daze's Serena. So let's check in with her and see what she's been up to. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Stephanie.
How you doing?
I'm doing so good. Thank you. It's been a long time since we've spoken.
I know. That's why we are so excited to catch up with you today and just hear what you've been up to. But before we get to that, we're going to go back to the beginning. So you were born in Dallas, Texas. Tell us about your childhood.
Yes, I was born in Dallas. And my mom and dad, they got divorced when I was roughly two. And then my mom remarried when I was roughly maybe two and a half, three, somewhere in there. And then my dad remarried when I was about six. And so I had a pretty large extended family. And then my mom's parents were also divorced and remarried. So I had lots of grandparents on every side. It was pretty cool. And then I didn't have any siblings until I was 13, and my stepmom and my dad had my sister on my birthday. So that was a pretty cool thing. I was really into dance. I can't remember. So I went to this weird, wasn't weird. It was weird to me because I was a kid and everything was weird, but there was this it was kind of like a daycare center, but then you could do kindergarten, there was pre-K and then kindergarten, and that was it. That's all you did there. And so I did that, and they had a ballet teacher there. And I don't think I really liked it that much that I remember. We had to wear the tutu. We had little ballerina slippers, the whole nine yards. I started really wanting to dance, even though I don't recall actually liking it in kindergarten. So my mom kind of went out on this search trying to find dance classes and stuff for me. And somewhere in the middle of that, I also did Plano Junior University, which was summer school, but to accept for smart kids. And so, and it was really cool. Honestly, that was probably one of my favorite things, because they had science. So we did chemistry stuff, and we did, computers, which, I mean, it seems so funny to say computers weren't a big thing, but they really weren't back then. So to have one in your school was huge, but then to learn how to code on it and all this cool stuff as this kid and not even really know what you're doing. And there was a robot with it. It was just really cool. Probably also why I love computers as much as I do. And then they also had, it was they had everything. And then they also had this kind of theater-esque type thing. So you kind of did some dance and you did some theater with it. And I remember it was a 50s style thing. So I had to have a poodle skirt, and my Nana made me a poodle skirt. And I remember really digging that. And so I think in my mind at that point in time was I already kind of knew I was going into this entertainment world, but I didn't really understand it because I was really young. I was eight, you know? And I had already, I think at that point, or somewhere in there, I started doing these one act, one woman skits. Think of Tracy Ullman, and that was probably what I was emulating because I loved her. So, but I did it in kid form. And my grandparents loved it and laughed and laughed and laughed. And so then I really thought I was pretty awesome. And and then I didn't want to do it for my mom because it was making fun of a mom and a kid getting into fights. So I didn't want her to think it was personal, which is also why I didn't become a comedian, because I was always afraid that people would think I was actually making fun of them. Then I didn't want to hurt their feelings, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so back to dance. Somewhere in there, my mom got me in this really weird dance class. It was, I think, modern, and we did it in like at a like at a community college or a high school or something, but like in a room when the chairs were just like pushed up against, you know, so it was kind of, it was bizarre. And I didn't really love it. And then one of my friends, who lived down the street, her, and her brother, so her brother was my age. And then her, she was like maybe a year or two younger. She was in dance and he was in acting. And so her mom kind of got us involved. And so I started doing dance classes and I had to do like all these private lessons so I could catch up and be like the same age as everybody else. Like, you know, be like in that, level. And then I did, and then I got into the company and started doing all the competitions and stuff and just like obsessed with it. Same point in time, somewhere in there around maybe like 12-ish, I started doing like plays at KD Studios. And I, the first play I did, I was like, that's it, this is what I want to do. And I divvied out the time pretty well for a while. But then at some point my mom was like, look, we can't like, you're doing everything in dance and you're doing everything in acting. And like, you're going to have to choose one, or we need to pull back on both and just, you know. And I was like, I can't do that. I can't do half on anything. So I had to make a decision. And I felt like with dance, as much as I loved it, I didn't think career-wise I would make it. At that point, I'd already started developing. I really love ballet, and ballerinas don't usually have curves. So I knew that I probably had a better option going the acting route. So I went like all in. And I'm actually blessed, like beyond belief. My mom, if it weren't for her, I probably wouldn't have anything, because she's the one who like did all the homework, found places. She talked to my friend's parents who knew stuff and knew where to go and got me into acting classes, and all because I wanted to, but like she did all the hard work. and then I guess it was maybe, it was like, I think it was 1984. We went out to LA for, and I want to say it was like for a dance competition. And then during that time, my friend that had like gotten me into all this, so we, the three of us all went to these agencies and, you know, did our things trying to get in. And the basic feedback that came back was we needed to lose our accents, which I was like, I didn't get an accent. So I was like, okay. And so they told us to go get this, I forgot what it was called, but there was this book with an audio tape that you had to listen to. And the guy, so it was supposed to be an all American accent, but the guy sounded like he was from New York. Not kidding. Like there was nothing all American about that, but whatevs. And not that New York's not great, but it was just like, that's an accent. Anyway. So I worked on that for a while, but it was really boring. And I really didn't think I had a heavy one. I have a tendency just to pick up on where I'm at. So I think that's part of it too. Anyway. So then in 1995, the three of us and another few people that we knew all went out there for pilot season. And we were out there for about like 4 months. And that was my first like rite of passage. And we also had to write something in school about rite of passage, so that probably helped. Anyway, but it was just, you know, gosh, it was transformative in so many ways. It was where I had my first kiss, and it was, you know, my first introduction into like what it's actually like to be in real auditions and, you know, doing that kind of stuff.
So you were only 17 when you landed your first proper television role on the children's series Wishbone. What do you remember about that experience?
Okay, so it was like probably one of the, I'm like struggling for words right now because I was so excited and I'm like reliving that excitement. It was the coolest thing ever. So and I tried to really play it cool, but I also like carried my script everywhere, like at school, to competitions, like, you know what I'm saying? I was like, totally like, whatever. Like, I'm just, you know, I'm just an actress doing my thing. Oh, also I had a beeper because I had auditions back then. So I had a beeper. The only other people who had beepers, people that do sold drugs, but I did not. So Wishbone, yes. So I remember like, I think it was like first day on the set. And I don't know, like, how much people know this or not, but I'm pretty hyper. I was really, really hyper when I was younger. And I think I'm probably still that way. And So when I get excited, it gets worse. So I just remember like being on set and just being like, hi, like real cheesy, but like totally meaning it. and just like being really overly excited, probably with the producers and stuff. I mean, I don't think they cared because they're probably used to kids, but I was just really ridiculous. So then when we were on set, that was, you know, my first time being on a real set with other actors who absolutely had been doing this for a long time, because, you know, and then, you know, even just like having the difference between the director and having a cinematographer, you know, just all these different things where I was like, oh, wow, okay. And I'm just trying to take it all in. But then, of course, also like, you know, deliver my lines, not sound like a weirdo and not look like I'm so stiff, which I'm sure I did. And it was fun. It was just so much fun. And it was a cool role too, because the character actually was kind of like techie and stuff. And I was like, oh, totally fits. So yeah, that was pretty cool. And the guys, the two lead actors, Adam and I think it was Jonathan, is that right? Something like that. They were awesome. They were great, great people. And it was just, yeah, the whole thing was just an amazing experience. And I became friends with a couple of them after. So it was good.
Well, after high school, you moved to California. So what brought you out there? And was it a culture shock for you?
So yeah. So basically I right before I graduated, I had gone for about a month, to just kind of like fill out agencies and stuff. And, my agent was like, you need to move here. So that I decided to graduate early, which I think actually started the process prior to that, like a year before that. And then, graduated early. And then that December or January headed out. And, I would say it was like sort of a culture shock, but not, because I'd been there a couple of times now. So I kind of had the vibe. And I moved to Burbank. So it was like real simple, you know what I'm saying? It was very suburbia, even though there's still like, you know, Hollywood's right over here. But like, so in that way, I think it was, I feel like in some ways I was sheltered in that sense. And I went to school and I had a job, and I actually transferred my job. I was working at Nordstrom in Dallas, and then I transferred to LA, to one of the LA branches. And yeah, I was just, I was just constantly like smiling and excited. And it was one of those things too, where I didn't, and I think that's the nice part about being a teen, or, you know, naive and, well, not naive, I don't like that word. Just being, you know, not jaded, I guess. Because I knew I was going to book something. I didn't know when, but I knew it was coming, and I just needed to have patience. And there were times every once in a while when someone's like, oh, you've been there how long, you know, and just kind of feeling like, you know, but I was like, nope, it's going to happen. It's happening. It's going to happen. And, yeah, so I just knew it was a matter of time. And when it did, it was the timing was, couldn't have been more perfect.
And are you referring to One Life to Live when you think about that, or a different project?
No, it was One Life.
Yeah. You were basically a baby when you landed the role of Natalie in 2001. Yeah. So tell us your One Life casting story.
Yeah. So that was, it was really kind of cool. So, I had gone out for the role of Jen, actually, maybe 6 months before that. And also, like, I'll just like briefly add, right before all of this, so like that December of the year before, I had gone to my parents and was just like, I can't do full-time school, full-time job, full-time trying to have a career. I feel like I'm not putting enough into my career. And I was like, I need to, you know, focus on that more. And I want to drop out of school. And I was like in my fourth year too. And they weren't happy about it, but I was like, please understand. Like, I know I'm close, but I've got to put my energy there. So they agreed, I think begrudgingly, but did. And within 4 months of that, I booked the show. So backing up, I had auditioned for Jen. Didn't get it, obviously. But I think I had gotten a call back on it. So there was already like that momentum. And maybe it was like that January, February, something like that. I had the audition for, I can't remember the character's name because it literally changed 3 times. I remember it started off as one character, then it went to Valerie, and then it changed eventually to Natalie. But I forget what the first one was. And the role was completely different than what Natalie is, like completely different. It was almost more Jen-like, or like early Jen-like, like very, very sweet, very, you know, girl next door kind of thing. And then when I got the, screen test, literally like the day I was flying out, they changed it. It was like a new character name and like the entire script was different, totally different, everything. And then we that was crazy because I'd never done a screen test before. However, I had been in this acting class for years. And they really, it was Brian Reese's acting class, and they really teach you what it's like to be in the business. So like all the things that we would do, it was almost like I'd been practicing for so long to be that, to be on set, that I felt like when I did the screen test, like I was nervous, trust me. There's a lot of reasons to be nervous. I also woke up late, but I like felt in control in a weird way, even though I was super nervous. Like the nervousness was almost more like excitable energy, if that computes. So yeah, so flew out to do the screen test, and then worked on it the night before, and then come the morning of, did not wake up, and I get woken up to a phone call from casting. I'm like, hey, where are you? I'm like, oh crap, you know, and I just think my whole world's destroyed at this point. I'm like, oh, I've screwed it all up, and I'm like trying to race out of the hotel because we also had to bring like our bags and everything, like we're checking out too. And that was back when I think it was called the Empire or something like that. It was right there near the studio. So I just like raced with my suitcase there, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then like no one really knew that I was late except for casting. So I was like, thank God. So that worked out really well. And yeah. And then I went in and I just did it. And then I remember Frank gave me this note. He wanted me to hug Brandon Routh and like have a tear coming out of my eye as I hugged him. And I did it. And I remember thinking, oh, that's going to be, and then it like happened like nothing. I was like, yes. And so I walked out feeling like I absolutely did the best I could do. So if I didn't get it, I was like, whatever, because I nailed it. And then I got it. And the news that when I got the news, it was like, I don't even think I could repeat that today unless I won the lottery. Like, it was like, I remember my agent calling, and I was driving to lunch. I went to this place for lunch like pretty much every day. And he was like, are you sitting down? I was like, well, I'm driving. He's like, well, you might want to pull over. And I was like, why? What's going on? And he starts to tell me, and I just can't stop the screaming, you know, like a little girl, like, ah! You know, just goodness. So I pulled over, and I was crying, and I was like, smiling. And I mean, I couldn't even like breathe in all of it. And here's the deal. Like, just because you got it doesn't mean you're going anywhere, because you still have to accept like all the deal offer stuff. Or maybe we already did that part. I don't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, had you ever watched soaps before? Like, did you even know what you were getting into?
Yeah. My mom watched One Life to Live since I was young. I mean, like she'd been watching General Hospital, One Life to Live, and I think probably also All My Children. And then I watched the CBS ones more, because, or really just Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful, because my stepmom watched those. And when I was there, like in the summer, I'd watch. but yeah, so I totally knew who the characters were. And yeah, it was also like really bizarre, because it was just this like surreal feeling of, I'm going to be on that thing that I was watching. And because those characters like go for decades, like you're still a part of something that like you kind of grew up with. It's super, super just like, it's surreal. It's really surreal. And then like going to New York was also that was the culture shock. That was like, okay, this is different and challenging. And there was a lot of good things about it, but there was a lot of things that I was just like, whoa, I don't even know how to handle, like homeless people getting really mad at you for things, and like stepping on you, stomping on your foot, and you know, just like crazy stuff. And just, you know, people in general are much more, I think, abrupt at times and to the point, which is not necessarily bad, but I wasn't used to it. So yeah, there was definitely like a lot of, oh wow, this is different. And even just like the studio, right? Like the studios in LA compared to the studios in New York, 1000% different. 1000%. Like we were sharing dressing rooms because that's how small the space was. And it was like a gajillion years old, the building. And, you know, people in LA are like in these like sets that are on sound stages that are next to like all these other TV shows that are like primetime, you know? So very different.
I have to know, who your dressing room roommates were.
So originally my roommate was Aaron Torpy. And then at some point, I think it changed to maybe Eileen. And then at some point it changed to Patricia Elliott. And actually, I should say, you were kind of right. I think it was both of them. I think it was Patricia Elliott and Patricia Mortieri I was sharing with. And then eventually, Jessica ended up moving, Jessica Morris ended up moving into my room, and then we shared. So that was the most fun.
You actually played Jennifer, the role that you were tried out for.
Yes. And we became like pretty much besties immediately. So it was awesome.
I absolutely love that.
Natalie was introduced as the surprise daughter of Victoria Lord and Clint Buchanan, the surprise twin of Jessica Buchanan, who had been kidnapped at birth by Allison Perkins and raised by Roxy Balsam. So first, let's talk about your legendary on-screen parents, starting with Erica Slezak, who played Vicky. So tell us about working with her.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, you know, like she's someone who could easily be just kind of like, I don't know, look down at you or something. You know what I mean? Like she could be that person. She's not that person. From the day, the first day I worked with her, I was embraced. Like she kind of brought me in like under her wing and like super encouraging, complimented me when I did a good job. Like it was just stuff where I was like, oh my God, I can't even believe she's, you know, and she's so good. So doing scenes with her was just, I mean, it was easy and it was crazy because you're like, my character had to come in kind of, I mean, at first I was, you know, all sneaky, but once I was coming out about like how not so nice I was, like I had to go at it with her and it was awesome. It was so much fun. And gosh, and she's so good at it. Ugh, so fun. So fun. I'm probably one of the nicest people as well.
Well, very sadly, your on-screen father, Jerry Verdorn, passed away after a cancer battle earlier this year, and you paid really beautiful tribute to him on your Instagram, but we would love to hear more about what your relationship with him was like.
Absolutely. Oh, Jerry. Ugh. He was, I'm going to get all upset. He was a really, really, really nice guy, but just more than that. He was just really happy. Like he came into work and he was just always like in this amazing mood. And there are a lot of times like being on any job, it's not just soaps, it's not just acting, any job you're on, like you're there, no matter how much you love it, eventually there's things that it's easy like for people to start complaining about this or that. And complaining is fine and whatever, but sometimes it can get a little bit toxic. And I'll tell you, Jerry like came in and he just always had this like other like face, like he was different. He brought in so much positivity and he's so easy to work with. It was funny, but he just, I don't know, like he just felt like somebody who you could feel completely safe with, and whether it was in your scenes or just in life. And he was just a good person.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, then there's also Eileen Christian, who played Roxy, who you mentioned was also your dressing roommate. What stands out to you about working with her?
Oh my gosh, Eileen, she's great. she had such a great like take on Roxy. Like it was so rough, then had this like side of her where you're like, gosh, I can't help but like you, you know. It's just, you know, and oh man, and because I remember even when I first read scenes with Roxy before meeting her, I had this image of what she would, or like this image of how she would be, and then Eileen comes out and does it like 1,000 times better than I imagined. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't just this one note. There were so many things going on with that character, and it wasn't, you know. And it was always like that. It was always like that. And yeah, she's just incredible and fun. She liked to have fun in scenes, and she always had a really interesting take with. And there were times too where she would think of something, and I mean, in my mind, it was, and then you'd like, and then we'd do it. And she's like, okay, this is why she's pro.
That's awesome.
She's great.
So Erin Torpey was playing your twin, your on-screen twin, Jessica, when you began, but you worked the longest with her successor, Bree Williamson. So what are your like most vivid memories of Bree?
Oh gosh. Oh man. I love that girl. You know, so in character wise, like playing, when we're playing those, when we're playing our characters, sorry. When we're playing, you know, because she had her DID, so she was various characters.
Yes.
But the relationship that Natalie had with Jessica and the relationship that I had with Bree because of that, I feel like it was just so cool. Because I like I said, I didn't grow up with siblings in the realm of like us being kind of in the same age range, right? So I didn't really know what that would look like, but also our characters did it, so that was kind of different. But like Bree has a sister, and so she knows those dynamics. But I feel like it always worked so well, our personal lives, the way that kind of turned into how we were able to play it with the characters, because I could relate to what Melissa would feel in those situations. And I'm sure same for her, but she's such a freaking good actress and a good person. And she's really smart. She's very wise about a lot of things that I actually didn't agree with probably 20 something years ago. And now today I'm like, you know what? She had it. I really have so much respect for her. And even now, like with the stuff that she's doing with her clinical work, and it's just, you know, she's a very impressive woman, but also like just a really great human being. I remember because we kind of got married around the same time. I think I got married in August. She got married in September, and we would talk about all the stuff. And you know, she was someone who listened really well, and she always had really good advice. I didn't always take it. probably took it less than I should have, but she's, again, I mean, I have nothing bad to say about her. She's good. Mm-hmm. Good people and amazing acting.
Yeah. Well, one of the show's most infamous villains, Mitch Lawrence, was a thorn in Natalie's side, mm-hmm. on and off for many years. He was played by, sadly, another late actor, Roscoe Bourne. So tell us about working with Roscoe.
Oh, gosh, Roscoe. Gosh, that man. So he had stuff like where you did not know what was coming. And then it was just like, oh, so good. He played evil better than anyone I know. And it was fun, you know, like we had so many cool scenes together, like even just like the almost rape scene, you know, like, oh my gosh. And then him kidnapping me and dyeing my hair to like kill me off to my grandfather. It's just so many, the storylines were hilarious, but like also he just did so good. And I think one of my favorite scenes with him, there were so many, but I think my favorite was, I believe we were in like a church or an abandoned church or something. And he had me kidnapped. I was tied up and stuff. And then I think John and some other people showed up, but I think if I remember correctly, of course, sometimes I make up stuff, but I think I shot him. And I think that might've actually been the last time he was there. But you know, that man, he died, like fake died like 16, 17 times, I think.
You know.
Okay.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Typical.
All in a day's work.
Right. I mean, hello. Yeah, just so cool.
In 2003, you won the Soap Opera Digest Award for Outstanding Newcomer. What do you remember about your big win, and where's your award today?
So that was a really interesting time. So I think that actually might have been, maybe, that might have been my first award show. If it wasn't, then I had done the Emmys the year before. But I feel like I didn't do the first year of Emmys for some reason. I have social anxiety, so I tried to like avoid stuff all the time. And so anywho, I had been told it was like a little more, you know, hip. Soap opera producers were like, you know, a little more hip. It wasn't like Emmy style or whatever. And so, I think I had, somebody had said they were going to get me hooked up with some clothes, but then like the clothes that they got, just, it really didn't work right with me. And so I really didn't have any time to like find something. And we were staying at this hotel, right where like the, I think it's not, I don't even know if it's called that anymore, but I think it's the Kodak Theater now, maybe, maybe. I think it was the Renaissance Hotel back then. So anyway, there's like a mall in there, but it's like a sort of mall, not very many stores. And, there was like one store that I could go and try to find some clothes in, and I literally could not find anything. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to go, like, I think I was thinking like Avril Lavigne-ish in my mind. I don't know that that's really how it came off, but it was like a button-up shirt and a black skirt or something. And so it kind of looks a little like school teachery, but that's not what I was going for. I'm not fast. I don't know. I did what I did. However, what was cool, because I think I won, but I think I also presented, because I remember getting to go and get, I got a scooter that year. It was like super exciting. So that was really cool. And winning was like amazing. I was, I'm the person who really likes to try to include everybody, but also not be the annoying person who's like literally naming off every single person that they've ever met and seen in their life. And I had prepped something just in case, because I'm really, really horrible at speaking off the cuff. I forget things very easily. And, especially if I'm nervous, oh my gosh, forget it. And, so I had written it out, and I was actually kind of surprised that I was going to be using it. Right. And one of the things I had done was trying to kind of encapsulate everyone, like all the producers, because here was the weird thing, right? So Brian Franz had been the head of daytime. Or no, I'm sorry. Yes. Brian Franz had been the head of, no, I'm wrong. We had an executive producer before Frank, and his name was Gary Tomlin.
Gary Tomlin. Mm-hmm.
Woo, got it. And, basically what happened was, I think Angela, I want to say her name was Angela somebody, she was head of daytime. Then she was gone. Brian Franz came, and Gary Tomlin was then gone. And then Frank was our supervising producer, became like an interim executive producer, but he wasn't the actual executive producer yet until later. So anyway, the reason it was weird is because part of my speech was to be like, I want to thank so-and-so for the opportunity, da, 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 whatever, right? But like, I didn't know who I was supposed to thank, because it wasn't this person who hired me. It was this person who hired me, and they're not there anymore. But then I don't want to like, you know, not, you know what I'm saying? So I tried to do this thing where I was like keeping everyone, you know, like almost like a little too generic maybe. And so then later, I think I might have hurt some feelings because I didn't call out. And so and it was like, whatever. It was still great. And I was so excited that I won something. And I got a scooter. So that was amazing too.
That's good. Well,
Besides the scooter, that same year, Natalie's life took a big turn when she met one Mr. John McBain, played by Michael Easton, kicking off the very popular Jolie pairing. So tell us about working with Michael.
Oh my gosh. I love Michael. It was so fun. First year, I feel like something happened. Maybe it was second year. I don't know. Somewhere in there was like something that happened, because we had this really cool dynamic on and off screen. So it was just, I felt like we had a lot of fun. My character could be a little petulant sometimes, and his character and person was a little bit older. So I think there were times where it could feel a little, there were times where I felt like he as an actor was annoyed with with our characters, and I didn't blame him because I kind of felt that way too. But one day something happened, and I don't remember what it was. I honestly don't, but I think I said something, and I didn't mean it the way it came. Like, I think he overheard it, or someone else told him. I don't remember exactly how it was. Anyway, I think he was like really upset after that. And like, our dynamic changed dramatically forever. And I was like, what happened? Had no idea. So finally one day I had it. And I went up to him and I was like, all right, we need to work this out. It's like, what is going on? Why are you mad at me? And he's like, I'm not mad at you. And and then I'm like, whoa, wait. And so I don't remember the whole situation, but I finally got out like, I don't know, you're acting da-da-da. And so he said whatever it was that he had heard, and I was like, what? No, that wasn't for you. That wasn't about you. Like, no. Oh my gosh. Like, not even. So we got it all straightened out, and then like everything was amazing after that. And I'm so glad that like I did eventually say something, because that would have super sucked to like had that trust, because we, I think, had a very good partnership. Because that's what he felt like. He felt like if we were cops or detectives and he was my partner, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was cool too, because like, he had this thing that he would do, and he would do it sometimes before scenes, but then he would also throw it into scenes where he would like, you look pretty. And I'll melt like really easy. Like, it doesn't take a lot. Like, oh, compliment. Thanks. And, and he sounds very sincere when he says it too. So it works really well. And sometimes I needed to hear that, because, you know, I'm a girl and go through things. So, yeah. So like, he would say that right before scene, and all of a sudden I was just like, oh, okay. We got this. It's so good. And then he would say sometimes like in the scene, completely like out of nowhere, and so then like, of course I would react, but like Natalie's reacting, it was great. Oh, so fun. And and then we would do things like, so I like to be silly sometimes during blocking, because or rehearsal, because soaps are so serious, and also like if you take any of the scenes and the words and stuff and you just say them a little bit differently, it's a comedy. It's 100%. And so I like to do that sometimes, because I think it's fun and also helps like release some of that, like, I have to be serious all the time energy. And then it helps me be better like in the actual scene. So the other thing I like to do is make really weird, I just like come up with accents out of nowhere. And that's what started happening. I started like doing our scenes like in this Katharine Hepburn voice. And he liked it. So then he was like joining in and doing like weird voices. So we would start doing, I mean, all just in rehearsal, but like doing all these voices for these characters. And it was so fun. And it was great, because I think, you know, you need stuff to break up tension. And, you know, soaps are really heavy sometimes, like really heavy. So that was fun. But he was a great person, to work with. Really talented and very, very giving. And yeah, just, I don't know. I loved it. I loved working with him.
Well, at one point, the Natalie John Evangeline triangle was one of the hottest tickets in daytime television. I think also won a soap opera digest award. So your romantic, your romantic rival in that plot was Ms. Renee Elise Goldsberry, who, you know, went on to win a Tony and some other kind of cool achievements. But what remember about working with her?
Oh my gosh, that girl she's a class act. She's she just came in and she has this ease about her. If you know her, if you've met her in person, just like even the way she delivered her lines and you see like how she did on screen,
it's like how she is in person, just with ease and everything. And she, very smart as well, but just anything she said, you know, it just, it felt like it didn't, it felt like it was effortless. And I loved that. I loved that. And I loved her energy. And she was happy. And she was another very, very positive person to work with. And it was rare when you had someone that positive, you know, mm-hmm. Who just really had, she had a lot of qualities that, that I admire. I admire them today. And then I really admired them then. I looked up to her a lot. And then her voice, oh my gosh, she's the most beautiful singing voice. Yeah. Anyway, I loved her, and I loved her family. She is a very good person. I haven't seen her or spoken to her in ages, but, gosh, yeah. Yeah. She was really, fun to work with. And the thing is, like, with those triangles, especially, like, I felt like Jolie triangle, I mean, Jolie, or John, Natalie, Evangeline triangle, that got, they get really passionate, the fans, like really passionate, and sometimes not so nice. And it can be hard, you know, if you take things personally and what have you. And I never felt like, either of us took anything personally. Like we made it more, like it was just more fun for us, you know, like we just had a good time with it. And that was really all that mattered. And it was nice to have that, you know, relationship, and we played well, I think, off of each other.
So Natalie and John did finally get back together just as One Life was concluding its ABC run early in 2012. So tell us what it was like for you to get the news about the show's cancellation.
Oh yeah. That was a weird day. So I knew something was going to happen because I think there'd been some rumor and, you know, and then we had this like big meeting coming. And the thing was, is I actually really thought All My Children would probably go, and not us, because I think our money was better in that sense. Like our budget was better or our ratings were better or something. I can't remember at the time. So I wasn't worried. I was like, we're going to be fine, you know? And then the big meeting happened, and the meeting was with both shows. And it was like on, not Zoom, cause they didn't have that then, but you know, on
satellite,
video.
I believe.
Satellite. Yes. Thank you. And, it was so weird. Cause I wasn't really expecting it, cause I really didn't think they would cancel both at the same time at all. I was like, wait, what? That means it's time to move. I probably wouldn't have done this on my own. Okay, great. Let's move. You know, so in some ways I was like, all right, we're good. But I'll tell you, I couldn't not become emotional because every single person around me was just like so full of emotion. I remember like we walked out of that room and we're on the studio floor, and it's just like a lot of people kind of walking around like, I mean, just like zombified, you know, and then just hysterical people. And I couldn't, like all of a sudden I don't even know where it came from. I just literally started crying. Couldn't stop. And it wasn't even me being sad about the show but it was me being sad for like everyone, like the whole thing. It just felt wrong, and it just felt painful. I don't know how to explain it.
And
that was how that went.
Well, in 2013, you participated in the short-lived internet reboot of One Life, where you were paired romantically with Josh Kelly, who's now GH's Cody, who played Cutter on One Life. So tell us about your experience working on the reboot. And, you know, there were a lot of One Life to Live faves who took part in mm-hmm. that. Stephanie and I were both fans.
Yes. Yeah. I enjoyed the Prospect Park one, or Hulu one, for as long as it lasted. There were things. So what I loved about it was that it had an edge to it. I know that some people really didn't like the curse words and stuff in it, and I get that. I kind of personally liked, because I like cursing. give me a cuss word and I'm Abby. No. But at the same point in time, I could understand why, like, people going from here to here are like, wait, that's not my show, you know? So I can understand that part, but like the rest of it, I still loved. Like I loved how they just, they brought some, just, it was just edgy. It was just edgy. And I did dig that. What I
what I felt we were making mistakes on was we were spending a lot of money. In fact, it felt like it was probably a lot. I mean, I wasn't dealing with the budget, but like just seeing how lavish certain things were, you know, like even just having catering, you know, like we didn't have that before. And while it was nice, there were things I was like, gosh, I don't know, like how are we doing this? And not, and also like, we're going into this platform where people binge watch, and how are we going to keep up with that? Now you've got two shows. And that's a lot of, it's a soap, right? So if you're going to binge watch, like people binge watch all the time, people probably binge watch the soaps when they were recording them on, you know, the VCRs or the DVRs. But at the same point in time, when you go to another platform where the expectation is like, I'm just going to watch 10 shows and be done. People want to see like a week to week arc, not a day to day. So if I'm going to binge watch five shows, I want to see a whole, like half a season, not a week. And I feel like that's where we made the mistake, is that once we went to that platform, we shouldn't have been an everyday thing anymore. I feel like we should have gone into a seasonal thing. And I do think they were going to try to go that direction by the time we got canceled, slash they went bankrupt. But they were a little too late to that conclusion. So unfortunately, but I liked a lot of what they were trying to do. I just feel like execution could have been better.
Now, the following year in 2014, you joined the cast of Days of Our Lives as Serena Mason. So how did that come about?
That was pretty cool. So I can't even remember like where out of the blue, I think we heard from them, and I think it just kind of happened. And I didn't really know anything about this character, like anything, other than I was going to be working with the character Eric, but I didn't know like any of her background. I don't even think I knew, I might've known something about the Africa stuff, but like nothing to what it ended up being. Like I had no idea about the Blood Diamonds, like nothing. But I knew I was going to be working with Greg Vaughn, and that was exciting. He's also from Texas, and I was excited to go and like, you know, meet all these people from these other shows. Cause I really didn't, you know, it was hard. Like when we were in New York, we didn't really see a lot of the LA people except for an award show. So it was fun to get to know a whole other cast, and they were great people. Like everybody was there, the crew, everyone was really great. Anyway, story-wise, like totally caught me. I mean, I knew something was up when I was carrying around the elephant statue for a really long time. And I finally had this like feeling, you know, something was up. I was like, oh. So I finally like, I went to one of the producers and was like, hey, what's the sitch on like, what's with the elephant? And she told me that, that I had done some stuff with Blood Diamonds. And I was like, oh, and I remember thinking to myself, all right, this is not a long-term gig. This is going to be a short-term gig because I knew like, you don't come back from that. You know what I mean? like unless they go, oops, that wasn't you. you're going to end up being villain. So, so then I just was like, all right, just play, have fun. And that's what I did. And I enjoyed it.
I remember you always in interviews with our magazine having a good attitude about the storyline and then ultimately about your exit. And, yeah. And I remember really respecting that. And clearly you learned a little bit about the soap, how, you know, the soap biz goes.
Right.
So do you, you know, think about returning to soap operas ever? Like, is it something that you would be open to?
I can't say that I wouldn't be open to it. After my divorce, I went through this kind of crazy healing journey and spiritual journey. And, I would say I took a break from acting, but I mean, I still acted. I did a couple of things. I didn't completely just leave the business, but I just wasn't actively pursuing. So, I wasn't trying very hard. Let's put it that way. If I was offered something or I was brought into something, then I would do it. If I was interested in the part, but, otherwise I wasn't making a lot of effort. I think one of the big things was I needed to heal inside, outside, all sorts of things. And yeah, I mean, I think it was only maybe this past year where I was like, you know, kind of miss acting. I think I want to, you know, get a little bit back into it. And when I say a little bit, I mean, I want to a lot, but I still have been kind of doing my, my journey. So I'm not quite to like, I'm ready to go get new headshots, you know? But at the same point in time, like I would still work. And I do still work occasionally. I do like writing a lot. So that has been something that I've turned to. Jessica and I have done a few things together. I haven't gotten anywhere with anything that I've written on my own recently, but I've also been very active in doing all these other things that I just kind of, I get like sidetracked, but I'm excited to kind of follow that a little bit as well. And I honestly, like, I'm really interested in directing. And so I've been trying to learn as much as I can about that, because that's something, it was something when I was younger, I was really interested in. And even all on the show, I used to, you can ask anybody there, I used to go to the control room like all the time, just because I was like, I want to understand, I want to learn. So I feel like it's something I feel like I'd actually, if I got enough education on it, I feel like I would probably be good at it. So, it'd be fun to try for sure. And, yeah. So to answer your question in a very broad way, yeah, no, I would totally go back to soaps, if it was something that felt right at the time.
Well, you do have a new project that just came out, Saved by Grace, a 5-part inspirational series streaming on PureFlix. That is PureFlix.com for anyone listening and wants to check it out. So tell us how you got involved in Saved by Grace.
Oh my gosh. So this was cool. So this guy, so, okay, I'm going to give you like a sort of long story about this, but it's a fun story. All right. So Here to There, which is this, it's a show that these two guys wrote the full like 13 episodes of it. And it's a very funny show. I read all the scripts. I love, right? So they got involved with me or got to me because one of their producers that they had actually like reached out to me on Facebook to talk to me about the project. And I normally would never even like respond, but she said something and it was about Lucy Ball. And it just like caught like one of those things, you know, like your intuition where you're just like, nope, I need to follow up on this. So I did. So I ended up having this meeting with them. And like, that's when I get introduced to the script. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. And they've, you know, just been working on trying to get it like picked up. And it's a really good, funny show. And it's basically like Cheers on a ferry boat. So anyway, the point of that story is that this guy, Randy, who he ended up doing one of the, we did like a reading type thing. And he played one of the characters on there for one of the things that we did. So he and I became friends. Well, fast forward, he had moved he lived in LA at the time. He moved back to Oklahoma, maybe like a few years ago or something. And he has a production company there and he's been doing all the stuff, right? Back last year, last November, I was doing a movie that never ended up happening. But there was a point in time where we needed some production people and we had moved to Oklahoma. And so I was like, oh, I know this guy. He'd totally be great. Anyway, didn't work out because the movie ended up getting canceled, whatever. So done. But Randy, I like had reached out to him because I heard kind of through the grapevine that like he might be still trying to do something with it. And I wanted to kind of let him know about the stuff that was going on. And so I called him up and I was like, hey, just want to make sure you know. And he's like, oh, cool. No, I didn't know. Thanks. And I was like, by the way, did I tell you I moved back to Texas? And he's like, no. And he's like, oh, you know, this is so great. Literally 5 days later, I get a call from casting from Saved by Grace. Turns out Randy is friends with the director and had recommended me for this part. And so then casting called and like we got it all worked out and I went up to Arkansas and shot it and it was a blast. It was probably the most fun I'd had, in ages filming. So it was awesome. So awesome.
Fabulous. Tell us about who you play in the series.
So I play this girl. So she's divorced, and she owns a bookstore, and she ends up meeting, I don't want to give everything away, but she ends up meeting this guy, who, you know, turns out to own the buildings, I guess. And her rent had been, you know, going up. So it was like classic story. And anyway, they end up, she doesn't know this about him and he doesn't, I don't think they don't know that at the beginning, and they end up going on a couple of dates and they find out. And so there's this very, you know, we're not gonna, I don't like you anymore kind of thing, to making up and having this like really amazing, you know, I guess reconciliation, even though it's like they're still in the beginning stages. But the angels, they are basically the reason why we're able to do it, because they kind of talk to us differently throughout to like to help us work through the problems that we have and our triggers and why like that happened and how we could kind of work through it. So it was really cool. It's a very sweet, and the cast was so fun, and yeah, just everything about it was really great. And it was, I think it was like January when we were up there filming, and we ended up getting this like crazy snowstorm and ice, and it was fun.
That's great.
So Matt Borlenghi, who played Brian on All My Children, is also in Saved by Grace. Did you get to work with him?
No, we didn't. I don't know what episode it was. There was a couple of people that I saw were in it after the fact, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool.
Melissa, I have to say, it's like truly wild to think that it was over 20 years ago that you made your daytime debut. Like looking back now, how would you say that landing on One Life when you did changed the course of your life?
Oh gosh. Well, it changed everything. I feel like I had to grow up really quickly, but like I got to do it in the most fun way possible. And I went through some really amazing experiences doing that. And I think in some ways I'm like so glad, not some ways, always, I'm so glad that I booked so early on, because I feel like I appreciate all of that so much more now, even though there were probably times back then that I was, you know, not as, even though I was always excited about having it, I'm sure there were definitely times that I didn't have as much appreciation, I guess it's probably the best word. But today I can look back and I'm just like, wow, what a life I got to live, and see the things I got to do, and the things I get to do now because of that, even though some of them may not even have that much to do with each other. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a great, great thing. I'm so grateful for it.
And before we let you go, is there anything you would like to say directly to your fans?
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, you guys are incredible. To be there and be as excited and passionate as you were about Natalie back during the show, to then follow me outside of that and want to know what I'm doing today, it's just incredible. Y'all are like serious supporters, and just, it's always meant so much to me. And I know it does to all the other cast members too, that you guys just have been voracious for us, you know, and it helps, because there are times where it can be a little hard to be an actor again, you know, when you're used to working all the time, it changes. And so, yeah, just super grateful to have you there and supporting and watching the things that I do and cheering me on. It makes it worth it.
Well, I know Mara and I hope to see you back on daytime soon. And we really appreciate all your time today and just the stories you shared, and look forward to checking out Saved by Grace.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Melissa Archer for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.